Blog Talk Radio.
Seven Wonders of the Universe. You're about to hear the eighth. Welcome to Sports in Depth on SAR-FM Radio, the heartbeat of Africa, with your host, award-winning journalist and commentator, the legendary Doc Stanley. You have time to tell a friend about Sports in Depth. It's heard every Wednesday and Friday from 12 to 2 on SAR-FM Radio, the heartbeat of Africa, in the heartbeat of the Big Apple, New York City, in the heartbeat of Harlem. Now, here's your host, Doc Stanley.
Doc Stanley. Sports in Depth. Blog Talk Radio on the Trust in God Radio Network. As opening, we always open up with our John Coltrane, Dear Lord, a prayer. Dear Lord, we thank you for another day. And more importantly, have your will and way. Lord, we thank you for little things we so largely take for granted. We thank you for being our God. We thank you for blessings forthcoming. All unmerited. All so many unseen. But more importantly, Lord, that your way be our way. And we ask these blessings and all other blessings. In the name of your darling Son, our Lord and Savior. Jesus Christ, for you're God all by yourself. And it's you who made us and not ourselves. Clothed in our right mind another day. Have your will. Have your way. Amen. Dollars and Jesus. Amen. Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth. On Blog Talk Radio, on the Trusting Guard. You know, it's the boxing way. With Lady A. That's what we do today. The first lady of boxing here on SINT Radio, Blog Talk Radio. And one of the foremost boxing authorities in the history of mankind. You know, talking with Lady A, we get to chat and say, hey, you know what, this needs to be heard. Your intellect and your acknowledgement of this sport should be heard. And so, with further ado, we bring to you the first lady of boxing here on SIND Sports in Depth and on Blog Talk Radio and in the world, the one and only, the incomparable, the legendary, the lovely Lady A. Lady A! It's the boxing way with Lady A. We're looking for you to join us here. And Lady A, we're just kicking it tomorrow. We talked earlier about as the pictures I have up today. There's one of Ali. There's also a photo of Ike Williams, you know, the first man to simultaneously hold three titles at the same Ike Williams walked into the room. You were looking at the featherweight, the lightweight, in the welterweight champion of the world when there were only eight titles, Lady A. Only eight.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and the thing about it, they said he'd actually won the middleweight championship, but got jerked. So imagine that. And, you know, this whole thing started with him was that when he won the title, and, you know, he was sort of, you know, his adulation, he was glad and glee, and his manager said, hey, well, what's all this? You're the featherweight champion? Hey, everybody's talking about Joe Louis, the heavyweight champion. You got to do something to bring some notoriety and publicity to you, being the featherweight champion of the world. Well, so what? And that's when he went on his crusade. He was the idol of the great Walker Smith Jr., Sugar Ray Robinson. And the rest is history. He got a draw when he fought the middleweight champion. So all intents and purposes, I tell you right then, in the wake of the fact that you got a draw against the champion, in a time where you had to beat the champion, which meant he beat him, and in a black and white situation, we know how that came down. For all intents and purposes, Ike Williams was at one time the middleweight, the welterweight, the lightweight, and the featherweight champion of the world. The only man to ever hold three titles all at the same time, great Ike Williams, idol of Sugar Ray Robinson. We were talking and we were in the horde of things, and you know, Mel called me earlier. And he had said something to me he wanted to talk about. He said he felt that Tommy Hearns, without question, had the talent and the skill. But it was that Ray Leonard, Ray Charleston, named after Ray Charles, who was the better technician. I told Tommy one time, lady asked, you know, Tommy, you know, you just lost to nobody. Nobody ever beat him. You just lost the fight. I mean, with the hand speed, the power in both hands.
But Doc, you're forgetting that Ray almost lost to Tommy. Had it not been for Dundee telling him, hey, you're blowing it, kid. You know, you're blowing it.
Well, yeah, but you know, it wasn't that Ray went into the next gear. It was, and talking to Emmanuel, is that Tommy did not do the things that he needed to do. He didn't train the way he should for that. And what Emmanuel said, our late dear friend Emmanuel Stewart, said that, you know, Tommy had nothing in the tank to go those last three or four rounds. I mean, Tommy always had a stamina problem, but the problem is, I see Emmanuel now, and how much we miss our dear beloved Emmanuel Stewart, who always, in everything he's talked about, he said, I was a good friend, and he was surely that. And he said, you know, Tommy had started listening to other people, and Tommy hadn't been on the kind of diet, and that was one of the big reasons, Lady A, that he had a problem with, remember, Citron. Citron started going the other way, too, you know, not listening to, I mean, how could you not listen to Emmanuel Stewart? And I think that was the big key in the fight. Tommy hadn't prepared like he should have, because it was Emmanuel, and Angelo said in his book that when the fight changed, when Ray started becoming the stalker, Emmanuel wasn't very happy with him. He told, isn't this amazing? And you talk about the ability of Tommy Hearns. Emmanuel simply said, okay, let's go back to the amateurs. And Tommy started boxing. So Tommy showed us in that fight that he could box just as well as Ray. But the big thing in that fight, Tommy hadn't trained, didn't have the kind of diet to take him to have the fuel, which your beloved Harold always talks about, having in the tank to go those last three or four rounds. Had Tommy been on the diet that he had, and as we look back at it, Lady A, he was winning that fight by outboxing Ray Charles Leonard. But the thing that go ahead, Lady.
A lot of these younger fans these days too don't know how long some of these fights went. Some of these fights back in the day, we all know that compared to today, which is a 12-round fight, back then, some of these fights were going the distance, you know?
You look at so many that went to the distance, but the big thing that you bring up, Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth, the boxing way with Lady A, she's here. Oh, yeah, you've been asking for where she at, when you're going to have her back, she's here. You want to call and talk to her? It's 646-200-0373, 646-200-0373. The first lady of boxing in New York City and El Mundo, right here in SIND, Lady A. It's the boxing way with Lady A. She's going to have us say, if you got questions, 646-200-0373. And if not, hey, you're right. Just be quiet and listen and learn from the first lady of boxing of this era and generation, Lady A, right here on Sports in Depth. Well, go ahead, Lady. Go ahead. Your call. Go ahead.
No, I was saying that a lot of these fights, that's why conditioning was so important. And Dusty had mentioned it before about how you got guys now like Cotto, when you come to later rounds, they're not as conditioned as they need to be. Well, back then, there's no doubt in our minds, had he fought Margarito, you know, 15, 16 rounds, we all know that he wouldn't have had it in the tank. Because even at the end of the Margarito fight, we started seeing 10th, 11th, 12th round, how he really wasn't meeting up to the expectations that he had to be at. So I think, again, no love, not taken away from my man Miguel Cotto, all right, because I love him. But I felt like at the end of that last fight when he fought Margarito, you and I were talking about it, how, like, primarily the last two rounds, how we started seeing that his conditioning was questionable, his conditioning level.
Well, I think the big thing with him, too, is that, and I think this is something that we've said for the longest time, is that, you know, when Miguel lost his uncle, Miguel Cotto lost all sense of discipline and all sense of sincere dedication to the game. He started running his own show, calling his own shots, doing what he wanted to do, and physically, he's probably never been the same since his first three or four fights here at Madison Square Garden, Lady A.
Right, right. Well, I think too, Doc, I mean, just another thing to it, I mean, it has been a roller coaster ride for him. Since the death of his father, he really hasn't been the same, too. I mean, losing two things at one time, first his trainer, I mean, and not for all intents and purposes. You and I both know it was just because they really couldn't get along, okay? And then his father passes away the beginning of the following year. So, you know, just left a lot, I think, a lot of questions, especially after that Margarito fight. He took a big beating in that fight.
And you bring up so many points that just validate your genius when you interject the loss of his father. You know, mm-hmm. that just had to be psychologically a downer, maybe to the point that he's saying, hey, you know, I really kind of don't really care anymore, kind of going through the motion, which is sad and touching in the words of our beloved Howard Weston in The Sweet Science. I mean, you can kind of have a bad day and the coach can put you out of the game as a basketball player, as a football player, as a baseball player, but in a sport like The Sweet Science, where the guy's always trying to take your head off, you've always got to be at your best. I remember Alexis Aguayo said that.
I think with Miguel Cotto, a lot of people, you know, he's a kid who overcame adversity as a kid. He was very overweight.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
And then on top of that, you look at, you know, and then you got to look at something else, which is, you know, he was in a very bad car accident. He thought he might not ever box again. He's a converted southpaw. Okay. He broke his shoulder.
Hold on. Ladies and gentlemen, did you hear this? These are things you've never heard before, right? I mean, a lot of you didn't know Miguel got into boxing to lose weight. But did you know about the car accident? Did you know that he was a converted southpaw? Things you didn't know that you hear here first on Sports in Depth, especially on The Boxing Way with Lady A. Here, we not only bring you sports, but we educate you. When you leave here, you know a little more than what you knew, and then you find out that you didn't know what you thought you know, but now you know because we told you so. Lady A, take it, girl.
No, but he's, you know, he's a family man, into his family, and you could just see how after that, the death of his father, which, you know, his father didn't die of cancer, didn't die. He just died of an asthma attack from what I heard, you know,
mm-hmm.
and which is something that is, how many people don't have asthma attacks every day? And to know that his father passed away because of something like that has to be something that's a shocker to the family. And
you're adding a big factor here. Not only did his father pass away, but by the thing that he passed away, it seems such a very thing of simplicity.
Right. No, so I think that looking at him and his career, I don't really see him at this stage being, except for that fight that he fought against Mayweather, Doc, where I think he really stepped up his fight game. I really think that he's close to the end right now. And choose to disagree, you know, agree to agree, but and Dusty and I were talking about this the other day. I don't really think he's the same fighter, Doc. I really don't, that he was like 10 years ago.
Well, I mean,
here's a guy that almost lost Top Corley in Puerto Rico, but back when he was rocking like the Jerry Curl look, Doc, way back when, you know, he almost lost him because everybody was always questioning his chin,
mm-hmm.
you know. And it's not, like I said, it's not taking anything away from Miguel because I know he's overcome adversity in many ways. And a lot of credit to him. He's one of my – actually, he is one of my favorite fighters now.
Cotto?
Yeah. But, you know, I really think that at this juncture in his career, he should start considering just kind of, like, phasing himself out, you know? But we've talked about that before, you know?
Yeah, I think the point that you bring up, Doc Stanley Sports and Up on the Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guardian Network. That's right. She's here. You've been asking for – it's The Boxing Way with Lady A. She's having her say. She's right here with you today on Sports In Depth. The thing, too, I think one of the things, too, that helped in this sort of deterioration of his is that he saw himself as a businessman as he started to get into. The great thing about Oscar De La Hoya is that Oscar became a promoter after he got out the game. A lot of guys, Roy Jones Jr. included, and even Mayweather, promoters while they're still in the game. And unless you have the right kind of people, and you have to take your hat off to Oscar and getting Richard Schaefer, who does an outstanding job, to work Golden Boy for him. You know, you kind of can't maybe stay as focused. Roy seemed to do that well, though, depending on the people who had it around him. But you can't seem to stay as focused as you should be ring-wise. But I think the thing with Miguel, I think we saw the last of Miguel
In the Mayweather fight or in the Margarito fight, the last Margarito fight?
Well, no. I mean, Margarito and Mayweather showed us that what an outstanding this fight is. I don't think Miguel's a great fighter. People will say that, you know, it's a term like the term love and friend that's thrown around so easily in today's society. I think Miguel has been one of the outstanding fighters. But I think those showed his heart, his courage, his ability that he had, and his expertise in his game. But the last we probably saw of Cotto at his best was the first Margarito fight, which, pathetically, Margarito cheated. But that may have been the last we saw Miguel coming in, his skills at his zenith, him really, really all together there, and just a shame that as we find in retrospect how Margarito cheated. And even with this cheating and thievery by Margarito, I mean, this guy went to say, "Dad, you know, he's Joshua hitting me kind of hard." He was still there. He was still in the fight. But I think that's the last time we saw him, you know, just really 100% all there.
I think you can make the argument, too, in the Mayweather fight. That's the first time in a long time that Mayweather got hit.
Well, you know, you're right. I mean, well, you know what? We saw in that fight a rebirth of him. And we also saw that in the it happened for two reasons. We saw that a lot in the Yuri Foreman fight because I remember him, the thing, and you take your hat off to him. He even though he wanted Margarito again, and there, of course there must have been some disdain, he didn't, because I said, you know, we look back now, the Margarito loss was really not a loss. And he said, hey, you know, boom, 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 let that pass. But he said with Emmanuel Stewart coming into his camp, it allowed him to love and enjoy boxing again. And I think what we saw was the freedom. Free at last, thank God Almighty, I'm free. He had left Top Rank. He was Miguel Cotto, his own man. He wasn't being orchestrated. He wasn't being directed where he didn't want to go. He was his own man, and this breath of fresh air, this partaking of liberties and freedom allowed him to psychologically do some things in the ring and free his mind. And you're right. I mean, this is, I think, if we look back in retrospect, outside of the Oscar De La Hoya fight, and we go back to the Diego Corrales fight, where we saw Mayweather challenge. Mayweather really challenged. And you have to say, wow, what about this fight that happened a couple of years ago, or what about if Cotto was a little younger? But you're right. This was the first time that since he was with Top Rank, that he was able. You saw it. I mean, but you know, you see so much with expertise. But yeah, we saw him free. We saw him his mind at ease. We saw him able to control and run his show completely.
Right. Well, I think that when he had that second fight, Doctor, we were there. I mean, we were there. Me, you, Dusty, the whole sports and that crew was deep in that one, okay?
Yeah, right.
And we saw how hungry he was in that fight, because I think he really knew that he really won the first fight. You know, he knew that he won that first fight. And I think that he had to kind of exercise those demons that were out there and say, listen, you know what? This is for me. This fight is for me. Mm-hmm. And he proved it. I just thought that toward the end of those last 11, 12 rounds, you saw him getting a little sloppy. And you saw, I think in the 11th, like in the 11th, I think it was, Doc,
fatigue,
you were like,
fatigue.
Oh, my God, what's he doing? You know, what's
fatigue.
He doing? Like, you know? But but I think that was an important milestone fight for him, just because I think he had something he had to prove to himself, you know? And he kept tapping his back. Dusty and I saw it. He tapped his back like, I got you, Daddy. Daddy, I know you with me, you know? And he, with that tattoo on his back of his father, he kept patting his back, saying, you know, Daddy, I got this. And remember, this was not too long after he lost his father either, you know? So I think it was something that he had to prove to himself and to everybody else. Like, this, you know, this was a fight that I had to win. And Dusty and I spoke after that fight, and, you know, when we went to the post press conference and we saw Nazim Richardson, you know, there, you know, that we were like, oh, wow, when was Nassim? Was Nassim, you know, what was the deal with Nassim? But we all knew that at the time, you know, we didn't know at the time, but we found out at that time that Nassim was there as a psychological thing to say to Margarito, hey, dude, you know, I was the one that caught you when you were fighting Sugar Shane, you know, with your hands all wrapped up all illegally, and now here I am again. So I think it was more they were going to have him at Nkodo's corner to kind of be like, you know what, just have him stand there and kind of show Margarito like, yeah, you know, we know what you're up to. We know what you did, you know? So that was, I think that
you,
was...
You bring so much of an in-depth, look, sports in-depth, this is what you're doing, you know, and you're revealing things that unbeknown to a lot of people, and you—it just so much validity and insight to what you say. The loss of his father, the need and want to make Margarito pay for the first fight. All these heavy things that are so psych. I mean, Ray Leonard talked about one time where, you know, there was a point that he had to step away or couldn't do things, possibly because, you know, people forget the mental aspects of the game. It's not just physics, but, you know, mentally, there's so much importance too, Lady A.
Right, right. Well, like I said, I think that, you know, if you're beaten psychologically, that right there, it's like I was watching a show with God, what's his name? The minister, brother, a mother, the Potter's Touch. What's his name? Brother, heavyset? Preacher? You don't remember him, Doc?
What's that, Lady A?
What's the name of that minister, heavyset, has a show, the Potter's Touch?
A boxing show?
No. Minister, oh God, what's his name? He's a pastor. Reverend?
Al Sharpton?
No. God, what's his name? Brother Doc. Anyway, he said that, you know, a lot of people, just to equate what I'm trying to say to this, he said that people go to church to get their head right, you know, and to get their spirit right. And I'm saying that those are really essential components for boxers. If your head isn't right, at the beginning of the fight, when people touch gloves, what do? They look at each other. They stare each other down. Psychologically, a guy has you beat. Bernard Hopkins came out in the corner when he was fighting Jean Pascal and started doing push-ups. You don't think that's for him to gain a psychological edge over his opponent? Now, there are
true. It's a psychological edge if, one, the person allows it to be, and, two,
oh, right,
if they don't have the ability. I mean,
right. Okay, I remember his name now, T.D. Jakes, a very prominent
reverend
and pastor. I was watching a show with him, and like he said, you know, people got to go to church to get their head right, to get their spirit right. And I said to myself, wow, you don't never have more truer words than said. You know, because spiritually, emotionally, physically, everything has to be working together. You know, everything has to be working together and has to be working right. If those things aren't working right, you know what? You lost already. You know, look at a guy like Harold, our boy Harold, man. Harold called out Vida Antifame. Called him out. When a guy does that, there's a problem. Okay? When a guy does that, there's a problem, because you know what? He's coming to get you, and you better be ready. Okay? Now, there would be some guys that would crumble, and Dusty has said it in the past. That's why I love Dusty so much. That's my man. Okay? He brings these points out, too, and they are essential components for fighters in the ring. Okay? Mayweather wins fights in a corner. How does he win fights in a corner? Because guys are already intimidated. They know.
Well, I mean, they said that about the early Mike Tyson. Mike walked in with
Mike
the black
Tyson,
shoes, the black robe,
right,
a little sweat on. Hey, look here. Right. Look across the ring. Listen, I got something to do. I'm going to knock you out, and then I got to go. I got other things to do. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
But you only can do that. You only can do that with guys who are mentally, who allow that and don't have the skills.
Right.
I mean, he don't have the skills. I mean,
how about Tarver? Tarver's in the ring and tells Roy Jones to his face, "You got any excuses tonight, Roy?"
Yeah, but you know what? He told the Roy Jones Jr., who was no longer Roy Jones Jr. anymore. You know, I mean, come here, who's Tarver? I mean, if you look at Tarver's resume, well, Bernard Hopkins beat him.
The point being, dude, he's the first one to knock out Roy Jones Jr. And that's what's going to be remembered for the rest of Roy's career. Well,
I understand, but what I'm saying, I mean, a knockout is a knockout. But you're not talking about the Roy Jones Jr. The Roy Jones Jr. that he, because, and you know what, let's do it like that. You know what I mean? There were no excuses the first fight. He lost the first fight. There were no excuses. Roy beat him the first fight. So it's not like he lost a close decision. Roy came down, lost weight, and beat him. I mean, that's the fight he definitely should have won. I'm just saying that, you know, when the Roy Jones Jr. he fought the first time was no longer Roy Jones Jr. Was no longer Roy Jones Jr. I mean, and you know, what's his excuse? He wasn't talking so much from a psychological standpoint of view. At my point, he was talking smack. He was talking Yang Yang. And then luckily, it turned out that way. But who the hell did Tava beat? Tava could not have beat the Roy Jones Jr. that beat John Ruiz. Tava couldn't beat the Roy Jones Jr. at the apex of his game. You know what I mean? I mean, Roy came down in weight and beat him the first time. So, I mean, what's Tava talking about? And then what, did Bernard Hopkins beat him? I mean, who has he beat outside of Roy Jones Jr. Merritt? So you got to say, he's lucky. Now, I mean, I think there's sometimes, if he had said that to Roy, when Roy is Roy.
My point being, you people could talk a lot in this game. They could do it. Mayweather does it all the time. He wins fights, he backs it up, whatever. But my point is that there's still something to be said about that psychological edge in sports, period. And I think that, you know, those that are the stronger ones are the ones that are going to survive. And, I mean, it's survival of the fittest in there. You've said it before. A lot of guys come in a ring and they don't need to be in a ring, you know? So it's just another thing that I think is another component of what makes a fighter a fighter. You know, like we were talking last week about Adrian Broner. Who has Adrian Broner been? Like Mel said, this guy's got to stop fighting cab drivers. You know what I'm saying? And they have the nerve to compare him to Mayweather? Come on. Doc? You know, Doc? Really? You with me on that, Doc?
What's that, Lady A?
I said, you with me on that? Right. We were talking about Adrian Broner. Adrian Broner fighting cab drivers?
Well, I got a picture, but there's some talk about Broner. I'm glad you brought that. Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth, Block Talk Radio, and the Trust in God Radio. It's the left boxing way with Lady A. She's having her way and having her say. There's talk about Broner and Paulie Malignaggi. You know, the psychological thing, too, like I'm saying, I think it works with people who allow it to work. I mean, like I said, Tava, you know, the Roy Jones Jr. he fought was no longer the same Roy Jones Jr. And then you look at Tava's resume. I mean, who has he beat outside of Roy Jones? You know what I mean? On the other hand, it can play a part, but the guy that does say it has to be able to walk the walk and talk the walk. And that's the thing we've always loved about Ali, able to walk the walk and talk the talk. I mean, people forget when Ali first came up, you know, Ali knocked you out in the round. He said, he's just a clown, and four, he'll go down. You know what I mean? He's messing with me, I'm going to take him in three. I'm not going to jive, he goes in five. If he wants to go to heaven, I'll knock him out in seven. You know, Ali walked the walk, talked the talk. You know, you got to look at some of these guys who were talking the talk, in the words of Marion B. Boykin, and the B stands for black, bodacious, brilliant, and a brother, are perpetrating a fraud. Tava was perpetrating a fraud, but, you know, it worked out for him. The terms you talked about, JD, Pastor JD Jake's talking about, you know, people, and in a lot of cases too, people do. It's a psychological thing because, you know, the concept of church is one too that, you know, the church nowadays is nowhere near the pillar and the foundation it was years ago. You know, where the church was a stronghold in the neighborhood, it took everybody in. I always say, you know, people from a religious standpoint of view somehow get carried away. And not realizing that they say, well, you know, look at John 3:16. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whomsoever believe in him should not perish. But, you know, Christ said in John 15:16, you know, Christ said, I chose you. You didn't. You didn't choose me. I chose you. You didn't choose me. So it's not a choice that we make. It's that a choice that, thank God, that he picks us. We're looking at, you know, Bernard tries to use a lot of psychological stuff on people, and he can because of the inferior talent of these guys and also the lack of cerebralness, Lady A.
Well, a lot of it, too. We remember Doc when we went to see Emmanuel at B.B. King's with the Martinez fight? Remember what he said about a lot of trainers and a lot of the fundamentals that a lot of these fighters don't have and that they lack? I think a lot of it comes back to that, too. We've talked about it before.
I remember Lady A, the Trinidad Winky Wright fight, that, you know, after about the second round, nobody said a word in Trinidad's corner. Nobody said a word. I mean, you know, nobody had a clue. I mean, these are things that you like when you go back to, I mean, Emmanuel, Tommy Hearns, Raylan, the first fight. Okay, let's go back to the amateurs. Okay, Angelo, whatever was it, hey, kid, you're blowing it. Okay, do what you got to do. But you come back to the corner, and the guy can say, hey, man, you know, Buddy McGirt. I mean, people, and they broke off Buddy in the late, man, John Gotti, Antonio Gotti, you know, it touches your heart when you think about some of these people who are no longer with us and what they were into the game.
How about Vernon Forrest, Alexis Arguello, all in one summer. Gotti, Vernon Forrest, and Alexis Arguello, all gone in one summer.
And you look back at those situations, you know, Gotti was just a great, great human being. Gotti, a true champion because of the way he fought in the ring. Just a tremendous, tremendous human being. You know, hey champ, you got a minute for this? You got a minute? You're just great guy. You know, it's well, again, Harold Weston. You know, sad and touching, but you look at what Buddy McGirt was able. I mean, if Buddy McGirt doesn't get Antonio Gotti, Gotti does not elevate to the status of he became a superstar in this game.
I think you know, you could disagree with me, Doc, but I think that. I think what Buddy brought to Gotti was a different way of fighting that allowed him to extend the longevity of his career.
Well, there was no question. I mean, Lady A, quit pulling the thoughts out of my head and saying that they're yours. Okay, cut it out now. but you're right. Lady A, and this is why we love you. Not only did he prolong his career. He enhanced his career, and he made him rich and famous.
I talked to Buddy at the Hall of Fame like 2 years ago with Seaway. We were up there. Mm-hmm. And there's no doubt in my mind, when you look at fights that he had, like, well, everyone remembers the trilogy. I mean, the fight that he had with Mickey Ward. That big fight he had with him. But, hey, Arturo didn't duck anybody. Arturo fought everybody in his career. You know, but how did he try to fight guys? Like, I mean, the way I look at it is that my man had to have had a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week plastic surgeon. Because you know how Buddy, some of those fights to Atlantic City.
I remember he beat Tracy Patterson, and this will be a segue into the Trust in God Sports in Depth Artifacts Museum.
We don't want to get started with that, Doc. We don't want to talk about that place.
Well, I just want to tell you, there's an autographed rope by Floyd Patterson and Tracy Patterson, the first ever father-son combination to win world championships, and is also dubbed time and signed by Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. and Junito. He beat Tracy Patterson to win the title, and then his next fight, he was losing, and the old felt form, forgot who he was losing to, and this guy was beating Antonio from pillar to post, and bam, he came up, knocked him out, and that's before he had Buddy. And he, you know, he was one of those guys that I saw grow up. I remember seeing him coming through the press room at a college basketball game.
When you look at Arturo Gotti and the Mickey Ward fight, those are fights that you have to have. It's like having a collection in your house of DVDs that you know you got to have. Like most fighters are like Adrian. Like I gotta have The Godfather, that's a must. I gotta have Scarface, that's a must. You know, like that's a collection you have to have in your house.
The Wild Bunch. If you're gonna do Western, you gotta have the Wild Bunch.
Ollie Frazier, you gotta have Yeah. You know, you got to have Israel Vasquez and Marquez, you know, all their fights. You got to have Corrales, Luis Castillo. Those are the kind of fights.
Leonard Duran won.
Exactly.
Hagler Hearns, the
exactly.
only one.
Exactly. Those are fights that you have to have in your DVD collection. It's just a priority. It's just, you have to have it. You know, these are the kind of fights that it was a lot. You knew it was going to be
last man standing.
Last man standing. You know? And if we, and that yeah, just a quick thing that popped in my head.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Gotti fought Mayweather. And when Gotti fought Mayweather did the same exact thing that he did to Ortiz. Which was, there was a time when Mayweather hit him, and Gotti looked at the referee and was like, yo, what the hell is that? And he turned around and hit him again. All right? And you know what? A lot of people may not know that, but that's just Ortiz fight. Mayweather didn't do anything in that fight
that he didn't do in the Gotti fight.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, and guess what? And he won a fight. And Mayweather won a fight. But what I'm getting at is that these are the kind of things that, you know, happen in boxing. And these are the kind of things that only the real fans that didn't show up and watch these fights are going to have a chance to say, oh, wow, I actually didn't expect this to happen in this fight. But it actually went to this. The Alvarado-Rios fight. You know, it's two guys fight. Like, they were, like, fighting in a phone booth. The first one. I can't wait to see this next fight.
You know, it's amazing you talk about the Mayweather-Gotti fight. I remember Buddy McGirt when they were trying to make that fight. And people don't forget, that was Mayweather's first pay-per-view fight. And,
right.
And I remember Buddy said, you know, if, you know, with the contract situation, he said, you know, we'll fill Atlantic City up. We'll fill Atlantic City up with or without him. And you know, a lot of people gave Gotti a shot at that fight, which he really didn't have, but it was really a showcase fight, not only the first pay-per-view fight for Mayweather, but who had been fighting so much in Atlantic City too, but it was really a good platform for him. I remember Roger, who said the first two or three rounds, he had Floyd hold back, and then if you remember, about the third, fourth round, when Floyd started going to the body,
yeah.
And that's what turned the whole fight around.
Right.
I remember
after that fight was, wow, I bought the pay per view, but I sure as hell I'm glad I didn't pay the $3,000-$4,000 to stay at ringside.
Yeah. It was really a one sided fight.
Right.
But it was a display of the vast talents of Floyd Mayweather in today's game.
This is why I tell guys. When I listen to what they're saying, because I, you know how I am. Dot, when it comes to boxing, I kind of sit there and I, I'm very analytical and I listen. And
yeah.
This is why I love. I'm gonna say it now. I love Harold. I love you. I love Dusty because I feel like when I'm looking at certain things and I'm questioning certain things, you know, I don't stand by myself. You know, like I can actually say, did you guys catch that? Like, and I can say to Dusty, did you see this? Did you see that? And he's kind of looking at the same things that I'm looking at when I watch these fights, you know.
Well, I mean, ladies and gentlemen, Doc Stanley Sports is up. Blog Talk Radio, Trust and Government Network. It's the Boxing Way with Lady A. She's having her way and having a say. And you know, you really don't really understand what education you get when Dusty, and which was the case of the Miguel Cotto and Antonio Margarito fight in Madison Garden. They're sitting there together, and they're seeing things that only the gifted in this game can see, who knows the game, the jabs, the hooks, the body punches, the holds. And the big thing that Dusty talked about in that Austin Trout-Cotto fight was how Trout would just grab him, hold him, lean on him, push him away. Now, you do that four or five times a round. That's 20 seconds, okay? You're leaning, you're holding. The referee's got to start you back. That's about 30 seconds. So that's half of a round. Taking care of right there, but you do that, and you add in 30 seconds over the course of 10 rounds. That's a half an hour. You know, you're leaning on this guy just about a half, you know. So these are little things that I talked to some guys today, and they were talking about, and the average, and I said the most intelligent fan in all the sports is the boxing fan, because the boxing fan has to learn and read and dissect. You know, boxing doesn't come on TV every day like during the baseball season or the football season, the basketball season. And this guy, but there's so many Fanatics fans, and this guy was a big Pacquiao fan, and he made some remarks about Mayweather. I said, well, hold on, let's go back to Pacquiao. Now, Pacquiao, first of all, was at one time fighting only his own teammates, his own stablemates. He fought Cotto, he fought Cloudy, Okay, he fought Margarito. These are three guys that were all in his stable. In fact, Timothy Bradley was all in his stable. I mean, here's a guy who turned down $40 million to fight guys in his own stable. And the bottom line in Pacquiao, and met Manny, nice gentleman and everything. But, you know, you got to question a guy who turns down $40 million or whatever the cut is to fight a guy in your own stable and Margarito for all intents and purposes. And then I'm not getting this twisted. I remember what Dr. King said, forgiveness is not an occasional act, but a permanent state of mind. But, you know, for all intents and purposes, Margarito should not have been in boxing or even allowed to, one, make that kind of money, and two, to get a title shot. And this is what Vivian Harris said. He said,
well,
hold
on. I think, Doc, was it you that said to me that that Margarito was to fight Paul Williams, which right now we all know, you know, is paralyzed from the waist down. So, you know, my thoughts go out to him all the time. I mean, they did a nice piece on him recently. And he's
well,
such a positive
he said
guy.
He believes he's going to walk again. And here's a guy, and, you know, I look at it, if we realize after Margarito had fought Miguel, it just says a whole lot about Paul Williams. I mean, you look back at the punch that knocked him out by Sergio Martinez, and for all intents and purposes, you know, Sergio, that was a blind thrown punch and in a lot of ways a lucky punch. But I mean, here's a guy, he went to, 12 rounds of Margarito, and Margarito had the loaded hands. This is just, you know, you got to take your hat off to Paul Williams. As we look back, and there's no question, which we talked about on the show the other day, I mean, somebody tried to say that, well, you know, maybe Margarito didn't have his hands loaded then. What are you telling? That was the one night that he happened to have his hands loaded.
And I also brought up the whole fact on the last show with Muscles, my man Cisco Kidd, who brought it up. So I said, listen, when he fought this guy, Lujan, and his ear
right.
was dead. I mean, that you can't tell me that's something you see in boxing every day. What are we talking about here? It's not like we're rolling around on the mat in MMA. This is a guy that obviously something's wrong. You know, okay, you know, you get ringworm on your back, you're an MMA fighter, okay, that's expected. You get hit in the head, you get blasted, you get cauliflower ear, okay, that's expected. But you tell me how many fighters we watch in boxing that really have part of their ear severed off. You know, like, really? Really? Dusty tried to say, yeah, well, you know, but it's not a typical injury in boxing. It's not. Doc, have you ever seen anything like that ever, Doc, ever?
Let me say it in Spanish, nunca, Portuguese, nunca, and in English, never.
Yeah, Doc, I mean, come on, man. I don't know. You know, it makes you wonder. You know, here's something better for you. Here's food for thought, Doc, because you always do that to me. What do you think would have happened had Nassim not caught that? Where do you think Margarito would have been today? Or better yet, would we have been looking at something else similar to the Louis Resto story? Okay? Or would we have been looking at our first death in boxing in a long time that could have happened because of loaded hands? You know, I think that obviously, in my own opinion, I think Margarito should have been collared. That's my own, you know, he should have been arrested and collared. And, you know, obviously he put somebody's life in jeopardy. And one of the things that I just don't get is how does Bob Arum allow this guy to fight again?
Well,
This is what I've said.
Yay, Dusty!
How you doing,
you know,
baby?
Hey! Cut the lat connection thing, okay?
The next thing
you both be talking and speaking Spanish. This is an English-speaking show. Keep it that way.
Are you waving a racist flag here, man?
This is not a Hey! Listen, you know what? The way I brought you, I can cut you off, buddy. You know what I mean? I made you, baby.
You can mute me. You can cut my throat. I'll still be after you.
Dusty, I'm so glad you're on the show. I was just talking about
you. Hey, Dusty. Don't forget, you haven't had that other knee operation yet, baby. You can't move like you want you to.
That was good, Doc. You got me on that one.
And the thing you said about Aram, too, was, and Aram was just a vital part of Pacquiao Mayweather never being done, but... You know, he has this, it seems, and Bob's been one of the great promoters. Another guy, as DK would tell you, who attests to, you know, Ali got these guys into the game. But, you know, if Don King had, I've said this before, if Margarito was Don King's fighter, Don King and Margarito would have been banned from boxing.
Absolutely. Did you read the history of how they try to drown Don King with allegations when he first began to create a tidal wave and promotion, signing up the key fighters? And they were accusing him of tax evasion, and they were accusing him of the RICO statute. They accused him of a lot of things, and one of the witnesses was none other than Top Rank. But what I'm trying to tell you is the fact that the matter is that you have to look at the other side of the coin. Bob Arum was, I believe, a lawyer, a prosecutor.
I think he's an Ivy League grad himself, did Dusty?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And he is well connected. He campaigned for a lot of politicians. I heard the tail end of Lady A's fight with Margarita. I mean, the Margarita fight. That yes, he should have been banned for life. But
Dusty, what I was telling him too, and this is something that we brought up because I know, Dusty, you also being Puerto Rican like me, you know, we love Miguel Cotto and we follow his career and whatever. And I was telling Dot, you know, that fight that we went to go see was a milestone fight for him because I felt like in watching that fight, not only was he hungry, but he felt he had so much to prove to himself and he had to exercise those demons and show everybody, you know what, I know this guy had loaded hands when I fought him. You know, I want to prove that the one that I lost, I should still have that fight back. You know, I should have that fight back. And then I was telling Doc about how, you know, everything that Cotto's been through. You know, here's a guy, you know, he was in a car accident. You know, he broke his arm, his shoulder in the car accident. They told him he would never be able to box again. He boxed again. He was an overweight kid. He got back. He got in shape. He lost weight. He became a boxer. You know, he lost his father. He lost his uncle. You know, and I think that all that came out. And it was like he had to kind of prove to everybody out there, hey, listen, I think, and Dusty, just correct me if I'm wrong, but it was an asthma attack. His father died, right, in Puerto Rico?
Let me tell you about public service. Public service, I'm sorry, Puerto Rico stinks. The man
It was an asthma attack
That became either asthma or a combination of a cardiac arrest.
Right.
And the man passed out convulsing in front of a bodega. His friend, who owned the bodega, called EMS like half a dozen times, and they didn't respond. By the time they got there, the man was DOA. I mean, that wasted crucial time, they would have gotten to him, they would have revived him, and God knows he would have been, you know, alive today. That's what happened. But you're right in all the things that Miguel Cotto has gone through, and I'm not saying he's a shot fighter, but he's on the downgrade now.
I brought that up, and I told Doc, I felt like, you know, like at this stage in his career, you know, we're not taking anything away from him. You know, because, again, like I told Doc, he's one of my favorite fighters. I mean, he's one of your favorite fighters.
He's on a downgrade now. He's fought. Let me compare. Mayweather and Cotto. Who's had more wars between the two? Obviously, Miguel Cotto.
Right.
And it takes a lot out of you. It takes a lot out of you. And he's fought the best he has left within the last three or four fights, starting with the Margarito thing. See?
I agree.
Now, the fact of the matter is
Margarito the best and Margarito twice.
Yeah, right. So you got to understand that those devastating. In fact, even when he won fights, there were wars.
Right.
The war with Joshua Clowney was a freaking war. So
I told that,
you,
and he almost lost that fight. Remember, he got hit. I'm not a PR.
Yeah.
That's why he was rocking the Jerry Curl.
Right. Well, the
Clowney fight, he was taking. Pacquiao was ringside at the Clowney fight. Pacquiao left about the seventh, eighth round. And the quote was Pacquiao said, Cotto's going to get hurt. I mean, Cotto's been the kind of guy, he's been the Animal Fletcher type of guy, the Antonio Gotti
never
type of guy.
From
you know,
Here's
a line that goes back to Dusty's day.
I got to correct myself. The Puerto Rico fight wasn't Cody. I'm talking about
Chop Cody. But the thing
I'm
about
sorry.
Miguel, he takes a licking but keeps on kicking.
Yeah.
Exactly, and that's what has been draining him because the licking he's taking the licking that he's taking from are monsters, dudes who were shy and sidestepped by Mayweather. You know, Floyd did not fight Joshua Clary, Margarito, Luis de Jesus, Andre Berto. These guys would have given him a test.
You got to add too. Okay, on top of that, Sugar Shane Mosley. Right, keep going.
Oh, yeah, he fought Sugar Shane.
Sugar Shane Mosley.
You know, right. So,
you know, keep going.
What
I mean, he fought anybody, guy.
Yeah, I think that with the topic that you people are talking about is the fact that the power of the man, meaning Top Rank, he can do just about everything he wants. Okay? The fight with Margarito, number one, with Pacquiao, hey, he had a deal with Jerry Jones, and Jerry Jones runs Texas. So,
he's coming up, baby. This little kid is here, too, gang.
Dallas is going to go a roll with Jerry Jones and the boxing commission too. So, Margarito made $6 million with Pacquiao, and he made $2.5 million with Cotto Madison Square Garden. That's $8.5 billion he should not have earned. He should have. And remember when I told you when I interviewed him. I got my license back. I said, are you sure? You know, are you going to fight for? Oh yeah, well I got a 1 day pass. Boom! And there's a 1 day pass, so that means you can't fight anywhere else. Oh no! I got my license back. That was a lie. Aram's power, Madison Square Garden. He still fought with a 1 day pass. Okay.
Wow.
So this is what I'm saying. So the man's power is not so much the fighters, is the promoter, who is Bob Arum, who runs boxing in a sense. His rivalry, of course, is Golden Boy.
Bob Arum doesn't run boxing.
Yes, he does.
He does
what he wants to do. No. You don't understand what I'm saying. Bob Arum.
Hold on. Cisco, hold on. Okay, go ahead.
He has to do what he wants to do with his fighters. This is one of the first times in a long time that normally in my day. Fighters, stablemates did not fight each other. He had a round-robin contest with all of his fighters fighting each other.
Do we have the chariots and the spears then, too? And the horses?
Hey, listen. Back in the day, there's only three fighters. Him, Lou David, Cain, and Abel. Come on, Dusty, cut it out.
I'm going to get the hammer. But he can do just about what he wants to do. That's why he's getting away with it. That's why Margarito fought with a pass. That's why these guys, you know, why? Because he's a powerful promoter.
He cannot do
what he wants to do, but he still gets away with some of it. Yeah, Fritz, go ahead.
I believe that, you know, Bob Arum has power, just like Golden Boy has power, just like anybody, you know, who has some money in the game has some power. I don't think Bob Arum controls boxing.
I didn't say that. He said he has power.
Okay, he has power. He has power in the game. But you got to understand this. This is what I said before, that boxing today is like the government, right? Corporations run the government, right? So big-time promoters run commissions. You understand?
Yeah, absolutely.
Big-time promoters.
Hold on. Let me add this. It's not commissions. It's as somebody says, we need commissions. Hold on, gang. Give us 2 seconds.
So we need a national commission. We need a national commission.
Hold on. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome you into the Sports Def Nation. You've already heard Cisco, Lady A. It's the boxing way with Lady A. Just seeing the baby loves the Cisco kid. But now, welcome into the Sports Def Nation. Frankly, Mel, Cosell, Smith, Junior, Tony. It's showtime.
Well, Doc. The Sports In-Depth Nation is here. Our Sports In-Depth panel is here. Of course, I'm Mel Smith Jr. I'm here. We're here courtesy of the Trust in God, the radio network. The straw that stirs the drink is here. And that is indeed the incomparable Doc Sanders. Take it away, Doc.
Thank you, Rudy. And for those of you joining us, this is Sports in Depth, Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Radio Network. This segment is Boxing Way with Lady A, having her way, having her say, as she is leading us, and they're all here. The Cisco Kid, Destino, H-Rap Brown Lewis, Mel Cosell Smith Jr., a little Coco. And without further ado, we will now move in with Cisco and Dusty, round two. Hold on, gentlemen.
Nice heavyweight championship.
There goes the battle. Go ahead, Cisco. You were talking.
Yeah, go ahead, Cisco.
You know, like I said, it's big time promoters that kind of run things in the sport in a way.
Right.
You got money. I mean, you're a big time promoter, of course. You know, you got guys like Lou DiBella that is constantly upset and fighting with these guys because he can't get fights or his fighters to get the fights they want. You understand
exactly
what I'm saying?
So you see
what's going on. But you know what? You know, the thing is, like, you look at Margarito, or we talk about Margarito, the guy, you know, of course should have been in jail. You know, if this would have happened, let's say, 20 years ago, he probably would have been in jail. You know, he probably would have got banned from the sport. But now it's a different age. You know, Don King is no longer the man anymore. You know, Don King was everybody's rival. Don King was the greatest promoter of the sport, if you think about it. I mean, the guy, nobody, he didn't have a rival. You know, now you got Golden Boy versus, you know, you got Top Rank. But when Don King was around, you know, everybody was mad, you know.
Absolutely.
So Bob Arum now, he must be in a happy seat right now, you know, thinking, damn, you know, I don't have Don King to deal with. But, you know, he's got an arch rival right now. He's got Golden Boy, and Golden Boy is making one of the right moves, signing fighter after fighter after fighter.
Yep, after
you know
fighter.
What I mean? So their staple grows bigger. Bob Arum's staple grows smaller. You know what I mean?
Right. I was just going to say that I think that comparatively, if you were to take Bob Arum's greatest fighter, which, I mean, arguably would be what, Manny Pacquiao
right now?
And he's on the downside. I mean, he's
That's
on
it.
The downside.
He's
because
downside.
Of,
he's
you know,
gone.
Right. So really, at 80 years old, what is Bob Arum with his last dying breath going to produce another winner like Pacquiao?
Don't kid yourself.
You know what it is, he's got Todd the Buff, but he's not letting Todd the Buff do what Todd the Buff wants to do with the company. Believe
Todd
me, when
Buff
Bob Arum goes, if he leaves the game, either if he goes, you know, RIP, or he goes, you know, he retires from it, Todd the Buff is going to do dealings with Golden Boy. He's going to do dealings with any promoter he can get his hands on because, you know, he's not that kind of guy, you know.
Well,
but as long as Bob Arum is around, Bob Arum is trying to keep it an in-house. You understand what I'm saying?
Well, Dusty mentioned that the shystiness that he tried to do with Miguel when he was on his last fight.
He tried to sabotage a Mayweather fight because he said that Miguel owed him one more fight in the contract. So he couldn't sign up with Golden Boy. Because the fact of the matter is, if it came out that the reason Miguel Cotto supposedly on paper owed him a fight because he had re-injured his shoulder, that he had a car accident and he had to go to the hospital. So the fight that was pending, which was the Mayorga fight, had to be postponed. So that left a blank. He didn't complete his 10-year contract. So when he says, soy agente libre, I'm not going to sign, I'm going to do what I want to do, you know, Bob Arum looked at X's and O's. He says, wait a minute, you didn't fulfill your 10-year pact. You owe me one more fight. And that's cheesy. The one who broke and wished to get
on
the world,
you know, that's Cotto's fault.
Buff.
That's Cotto's fault because when Cotto's contract was up, okay, when Cotto's contract was up that he had a chance to either become his own man or to sign with a different promoter, right, he re-signed with Top Rank again. You understand? It's almost
Cotto,
like...
No,
yeah,
he did not
yeah,
sign with Top
yeah,
Rank. No,
yeah.
he did not.
Yes, he
December
did.
December 31st,
he
when he
re-signed.
Beat my guy, so he says,
I'm
a free agent.
He re-signed with... When his contract was up, I forgot what fight it was, he re-signed with Top Rank all over again.
No,
you know
he
what I mean?
Did not. It was
yes,
Pacquiao who re-signed. Okay,
no,
dude,
it was
Cotto.
Dude, it was Cotto, man. Cotto's contract with Top Rank had pretty much expired, and they thought Cotto was going to go with someone else, and Cotto re-signed with Top Rank all over again.
No, he did not.
Yes,
Francis.
He did.
Oh, where did he get that from?
I'm telling you.
He signed
a
10-year contract when he came out of the Olympics.
Yeah, but
Top 10 Rank.
Years. Yo, dude, 10 years was
and
a long time ago. He's been with Top Rank for longer than that, dude. You understand
no,
what I'm saying?
No, it was a 10-year contract. And he did not, you know, okay, look, I think we better research this thing because I know what I got my
You know what?
From.
I will.
You know?
I will. I will get back to you. But I believe that there was a time where there was a lot of words that Cotto was leaving Top Rank. He was leaving
yes.
Top Rank. And he didn't. He ended up signing up for a couple of fights. And I believe it was around the time when Margarito's situation had came up that Cotto was upset with Top Rank. And there was a lot of words going back and forth behind the scenes. But Cotto didn't leave Top Rank, told people that he wasn't going to leave Top Rank, and ended up, I guess, you know, having a couple of more fights with them. You understand
well,
what I'm saying?
What's his name? Interview with Golden Boy, word for word as much as I can remember. He says, I hope Miguel Cotto does not resign with Top Rank, because if he doesn't, I like to get him, but I'm not going to say anything. I don't want to interfere with negotiations. And if he's a free agent, I can get him any fight he wants, especially I can also deliver Mayweather. What happened? Bingo,
Doc.
May 5th, Mayweather and Miguel Cotto. And that was the third choice, because he had the Ghost Guerrero, then he got rid of him. He tried to negotiate with Pacquiao, trying to steal the freaking pay-per-view, and the last man on the total call would be
cut out the steal the pay-per-view nonsense. Cut out the steal the pay-per-view nonsense. Go ahead, Lady A. Lady A, go ahead, Lady A. Lady A, go ahead. You got the platform.
Why are you interrupting me when I say pay-per-view?
What's that, Dusty?
That was a contention.
What's that?
That was a contention between him and Pacquiao. The last
Lady A, this is today's show, The Boxing Way with Lady A. When she has something to say, we stop and we let her have a say.
Oh,
that's
come
all?
On. What was then doing?
Thank you very much. Let Dusty finish.
I just wanted to inject something in the conversation, but let her finish his point.
Go ahead, Lady A. I'll give you your choice. Go ahead.
No. My question was going to be to the panel.
Yeah.
Now that we know, and Dusty, you being the elder statesman, with Doc.
And that's an understatement, being the elder statement. That's an understatement.
Okay.
Understatement that you're wrong, Doc.
No, my question is, now Aram doesn't have much further to go, and now we have guys like Gary Shaw, Lou DiBella, we got 50 Cent, we got Mayweather, we got Cotto, we got all these guys that are now...
Right.
Kind promoting. Of self-promoted. So what do you guys think the future's going to look like?
The future's going to look like?
Yeah.
The way it looks today, it's going to be
bleak.
The same.
It's bleak,
because
Dusty.
Everybody is going to have his own stable. Everybody's going to protect its own stable. And you have the Golden Boy, ironically enough, duplicating what Top Rank did. They're fighting each other. Austin Trout. Golden Boy is fighting Canelo Alvarez. Golden Boy.
This sport is like Humpty Dumpty. You know what I mean? It had a great fall, but you can never put Humpty Dumpty back together again. You know. How we're looking at things. There's too many chiefs and Indians, and that's pretty much it. But what I do see is the constant gain. In Golden Boy, I'm starting to see how Golden Boy is signing more fighters, doing deals with Al Haymon, Floyd Mayweather, et cetera. And if they continue the way they're going, you could forget about Aram, you could forget about all these other organizations being the top.
Guys
that are running things in the sport.
Develop 50 Cent.
Yeah, you can forget about that.
Not so much 50 Cent, because he's a corporate man worldwide. Most of these guys are not worldwide. He is a corporate man in the corporate world, but now he's getting a taste of what he wanted to do for a long time. And immediately he got a promoter's permit. He has Gamboa. He has Andre Durrell. He's quite a few fighters of note.
At the end of the day, he has no fighters. Those fighters are recycled fighters. You understand what I'm saying?
Well,
those guys are you know, Gamboa.
Guys who are 10-rounders, who are champs. He got whatever it is, whatever is the ingredient in his stable, it's movable. However they're going to go and how professional or how far they're going to go, it's a moot point. It's up for grabs as to what's going to happen.
I think that in any business, you know, or any time you don't have competition and you have a monopoly, you know, there's room for corruption, there's room for problems integrity-wise, there's room for, you know, because you're not promoting other people and allowing other people to be involved, now there's no checks and balances. Anytime you have a monopoly and one person runs the whole show, I see things going bad. And I just can't see. I think it's great when you have more competition than when you just have one person.
Yo, can I interject for 1 second? To Dusty, I got something for you. Miguel Cotto re-signed with Top Rank. I got it right in front of me, right here. It was back he's part of a 2-fight deal with Top Rank. It was back in 2009. Okay.
2009.
He re-signed with Top Rank. It was to get the Manny Pacquiao fight and et cetera, et cetera. So it was during that time, after his Margarito fight, like I was saying.
The first Margarito fight.
He was, right, the first one.
Okay, well, then I stand corrected but I still
he re-signed contend. With him for a few more fights.
Well, then I still contend when I'm saying to you that when he declared, he said, I am a free agent. That was December 31st. I'm a free agent. I no longer belong to any... You know, I'm a free agent to do what I want. And that's when De La Hoya came up with an interview, which I saw, was the fact that I hope he doesn't re-sign. So this could have been a third signing up, which he didn't do.
Right, that's what I'm saying. That's what I was trying to tell you, that Miguel Cotto could have done what he wanted and been his own man way back before the Pacquiao fight. But I think because he saw if he didn't sign with Bob Arum, he wasn't going to get the Manny Pacquiao fight.
He wasn't going to
get
the Pacquiao
fight.
That's
why he re-signed with him again.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying?
All right. I stand corrected, Frisco. Thank you. I appreciate it.
And a good point on Frisco's part.
No. We have to help each other. But what I'm saying is that when he made that declaration, in fact, Lady A, correct me, did he make that statement after he beat Margarito at the Garden? He says that I'm a free agent.
At the press conference, remember?
Yeah, and and De La Hoya was chomping at the bit because he says I want him, but he didn't. He says I don't want to tamper with negotiations. But if he's not, well then, and then Frisco, you're right. It probably would have been the third reason.
Don't call me Frisco,
reason.
Bro. You know my name is Cisco, kid.
Huh?
All right, Dusty. All right, Dusty.
What happened?
You always get Cisco started with that, Dust.
No, I didn't hear. I'm sorry. I was talking. I didn't hear. What happened?
I said,
on the air, we use the air. We Cisco Kid, Dusty. The Cisco Kid,
yeah,
baby.
So
kid,
bad Cisco. Oh, Frisco. I got so used to Frisco before you could change his name that now, okay, Cisco, all right.
Cisco,
he may be on the lam, baby. Let's not give him up on the air.
Hey, drop. Let me make a quick point here, please.
Let me
try to be brief and just say this. You know, even though, you know, you're talking about the Bellas and the De La Hoyas and the 50s, you know, there's always somebody on the precipice of trying to get into the boxing business. I'm going to go way back briefly. When the movie Rocky first came out, which I believe was, the late 70s, mid-70s, unbeknownst to many people, but the guy who played Apollo Creed, whose name escapes me at the moment,
yeah,
if any of you can come up with it,
Carl Weathers.
Yeah,
Carl Weathers.
Thank you very much. The guy that played Carl Weathers, had been secretly offered after the movie came out, and at the time, this was a lot of coin, $1 million contract to, believe it or not, turn pro, have a few fights under the name, now get this, Apollo Creed, by a rich oil industrialist from Texas who wanted to make a big splash in the boxing business.
Exactly.
Of course, Weathers turned it down and the rest is history. But just to go to show that there's always somebody with a lot of money, which $1 million was at the time, and he had, you know, many millions, you know, are trying to make a big splash into the boxing business. And that, and even more recently, you had Harold Smith, if you all remember that name, of Wells Fargo's fame, signing everybody for the most money that they had ever made. I think he had been the one who had really
Harold Smith, who actually had turned the whole course of boxing around. He had that big maps card. In fact, he had a tremendous card in the Garden. It paid somebody some astronomical amount of money. And the big maps card,
right,
because at one time, Fox Sports wasn't there. Blog Talk Radio and the Trust and Guard Radio Network. It's the boxing way with Lady A, and we're all here with her. The Associate, H. Brad Brown,
yeah.
X, Lois, the Cisco Kid, Melco, Sell Smith, Jr., a.k.a. Little Coco.
I'm asking A to step up, Doc. Pardon me for interrupting. I don't mean to step on the idea and, you know, your promoting of our incredible stars on the panel. But I'm going to put A on the spot right here and now, because I needed you last week, A, and I still do, because Cisco, Doc, and Dusty was landing SmackDown on me concerning Bernard.
Hold on.
I'm
going to do it to you. You can play. I'm giving you a commercial music to come back. And now, the thing with Maps was, there was a great card in Maps as well. Eddie Mustafa Muhammad and Matthew Saad Muhammad, your guy, Rooney, said
right,
they would never fight each other. Well,
right,
my man, Mr. Smith, had a card in Madison Square Garden. You're talking about a card. Okay.
He had, the main event was Jerry Cooney against Kenny Norton, but the undercard was, okay, the co-main event was Wilfredo Benitez, okay, against Tommy Hearns. And then for those who wanted to get this whole, at that time, the light heavyweight championship, but get this whole thing straightened out, he had Eddie Mustafa Muhammad and Matthew Saad Muhammad fighting for the undisputed light heavyweight championship of the world. And, of course, it was found out something happened that Harold didn't come up with the digits, and that card was aborted. Later on, the Garden did put on a card where they featured Kenny Norton and Jerry Cooney. Cooney knocked out Norton in the first round, hit him so hard
first
he just set on the rope. But the original card was supposed to be Cooney Norton as heavyweights, Eddie Mustafa Muhammad, and Matthew Saad Muhammad at light heavyweights, with also on the card the legendary, two legends, Wilfredo Benitez and Tommy Hearns. And that was a heck of a card. Like I said,
yeah.
Harold Smith, he changed the course of boxing. You know, not only was he giving the guys big money.
More money than they were ever, had ever signed for.
At the rate he was going, if you fought for him two times, you were set for life. Everybody don't move. Frankie Beverly and Maze. Frankie, come. We're not going to play. Frankie. Frankie, sing song.
There you go, Frankie.
Fox Daily, Sports and Lip. Fox Daily, Radio. The boxing way with Lady A will be great back after this message. Frankie, kick it. Sports and Lip, brought to you by Chipito's number one. Sandwiches, hamburgers, whatever you want. Numuno in Fortaleza, Nana, in all of Brazil. So, hey, when you're Fortaleza, you're hungry, it's Chipito. And we'll get a nice Portuguese question for you. And real quickly, gentlemen, as we talk about some things, something just hit me now. I thought about it. Hold on, gang. Let's get this again. It is Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth, Blog Talk Radio, the boxing way with Lady A. But as we move today, it just hit me. On this day, on a Monday, in 1971, in Madison Square Garden, the undefeated heavyweight champion of the world, Smokin' Joe Frazier, and the former undefeated heavyweight champion of the world, Muhammad Ali, squared off in Madison Square Garden in
the
greatest
century
boxing event in the history of mankind. When the smoke had cleared, Smokin' Joe Frazier not only won the fight, but became the first man ever to beat Muhammad Ali. It happened on this day, on a Monday, March 8, 1971, as Don King says, in the Temple of Boxing. And we remember the late great Joe Frazier, and always pay homage to the greatest of all time, Muhammad Ali. African-American history, boxing history, American history, A, B, C, and D. On this date, March 8, 1971, ding, 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 the winner by unanimous decision, and still the undefeated, undisputed heavyweight champion of the world, Stokin Joe Frazier. Great night.
You know, Doc, I was always an Ali guy, and when Frazier hit him with that left hook and the 15th round, I was like, oh, my God, how is he ever going to get up?
He got right up. And the thing about that fight was, your people forget, you know, Joe went to the hospital. There's a great article.
They both went together.
They both went
to the hospital that night. Their faces were out of shape. Swollen melons.
Ali left, Joe didn't. William Roden wrote a great article about after the fight, and Ali says, you know, there's mayhem in the ring and everything, and he looks, and here comes Joe Frazier. He said you could hardly see his eyes. His face was puffed up. And Ali hit Ali. He thought about the fact that he had said that, you know, if Joe Frazier beat him, he would crawl across the ring. And he said,
yeah,
here comes Joe, and Joe looks at him, and Joe says, hey, man, you know, Ali boasts a good fight. And Joe looked at him and said, hey, man, we don't do no crawling around here. That's all you need about Joe Frazier. We don't do no crawling around here. And if you remember, fans, it was Joe Frazier who last did a radio show right here with us on Sports in Depth, a show we will always remember. And Joe's last line to us, Joe said, I gotta go. He said, but I love you like a hawk loves, like a pig loves slop. And we'll never forget that. But you never forget it. The greatest boxing event in history of mankind. March 8th,
and then one of the few fights that could legitimately be called the fight of the century.
No, it's Rooney. There's no need to interrupt right now, Rooney, because Rooney, it wasn't the fight of the century. It wasn't the fight of the century, Rooney. It was the fight of all times. You had never had two undefeated heavyweights, two champions. It was the greatest fight, not only in Madison Square Garden. It's not the greatest fight in the United States. It's not the greatest fight in the world. It's the greatest boxing event in the history of mankind. Even Cain Abel had to take second seat to this. Doc Stanley.
And Doc, if you remember, they couldn't get another person in the garden with a shoe on. They couldn't get another person.
Well, you know, not only that, Harold talked about how the garden had no idea what they really had. I mean, because, and it was an astronomical amount of money, $2.5 million. Understand, Ray Robinson made $3 million his whole career. But what Ali said, and he told Joe, after they found out how much the guys were going to make, he said, at $2.5 million, he said, Joe, we got robbed. I mean, Joe and Ali could have made four, but it's the greatest boxing event in the history of mankind, and Joe Frazier won it. And he was the first man ever to beat Ali. They fought two more times. Ali beat him again in January 1974 at Madison Square Garden. And, yes, the Trust in God Sports and Depth Artifacts Hall of Fame has an autographed ticket from that fight of both signed by both Joe and Ali. I was at that fight. Great fight, great night. And then they felt the last time, Don King, who was going to co-promote the fight tomorrow at the Barclays Center, his first fight ever at the Barclays Center, brought us the Thriller in Manila, their last encounter. Ali won two out of three of the contest. But it was this night when Leroy Neiman said it was the night of the night. Anybody and everybody was there. That great line, if you wasn't there, you were square. The Kennedys were there. Frank Sinatra was a ringside working photographer for
Magazine.
And was Frank that night who rolled in. They said when Joe Louis came in, he came in a wheelchair. Who was pushing him in the wheelchair? Francis Albert Sinatra. Doc Stanley.
That was his money man. His sponsor on the
Trust in God Radio Network. It is the Boxing Way with Lady A. We've got ourselves another good half hour here talking boxing. Once again, as I tell you, when you hear this crew, we don't leave you with just the sports reports and the scores. It's an education. They are not the best. I used to think they were the best. I have to be honest. They're not the best. They're the absolute best. Yeah, like Ali would say, they are the greatest. Doc Stanley, Block Talk Radio, Sports in Depth. on the Sussex Radio Network. And now, we will go back, and she will start us off again. The First Lady of boxing here. In fact, the first boxing, First Lady of boxing in the world. And now we will let her tag team with Rooney. I think that then Rooney...
I want my Lady A to come to my defense, Doc. Well, I'm so
waiting
for my Lady A to come to my defense.
Well, you know what?
Smackdown that you, Dusty, and Cisco...
Okay, you can talk to her, but listen, don't try to hide behind her skirt, because she's wearing pants, baby. She's wearing pants.
Look, the beauty of this show is that we disagree, and we generate more conversation. I mean, if we were a one-track mind and followed whatever anybody said, oh, yeah, he's right. Well, then what's the sense of listening? We have to create, because we all come from different venues, we all have opinions on certain fighters are being in certain venues in sport, and that's what generates the interest in this freaking show. If we were to sit there and say, oh, yeah.
Dusty, stop.
Let him go crying to mama.
Leave him alone. Let him go crying to mama. Leave him alone. Let him go crying to mama. Go ahead, Rooney. Go to mommy. Ask mommy what to do. Go ahead, Rooney. Go ahead.
Hey, Doc, I would be afraid to have Rooney come from the top of the turnbuckle like
Hey, don't worry about it, Lady A. I'm in the black tights tonight. Don't worry about it, Lady A.
Hold on, Dusty. Listen, I'm going to tell him. Hey, Rooney,
yeah.
You got those tights that you got to put around, like, you know, the short ones, like the real, like, the huggies, or you
latex.
Got, like, the ones you got to put over you? With the strap. Which one's he wearing?
Hey, you might like that, lady.
Hey, don't worry. That's not the big thing. The big thing is, don't worry, I'm ready to go today. I'm not wearing the mask tonight because it's too damn hot in there. So,
well, look,
you know.
I think, you know, tomorrow's fight with Bob Hopkins.
Oh, yeah, let's discuss tomorrow's fight. Thank you, Cisco.
Yeah, tomorrow's fight with Hopkins is definitely one to – Actually,
Rooney, we want you to go to Lady A, ask her a little question, and, you know, then we get to tomorrow's fight. Tomorrow's fight is Cloud against Bernard Hopkins. But, Rooney, go ahead, ask mommy what you want to ask. Go ahead.
Rooney Rose.
We've had this conversation, okay? And Lady A already knows that my point. I just think the guy, and we've had this before, I'm not going to drudge it up again. But A knows as well as you, as well as the guys on the panel, that I think he's too damn old to be fighting.
What is that?
Yeah, it's about Hopkins. He shouldn't be fighting. That's what Mel's concerned, you know?
What, that he's going to get carried on the stretcher before
Mel's concerned about Hopkins'
at this
health.
Age represents a clear and present danger.
If that was the case, more than half of us wouldn't be on radio right now, brother.
Yeah, but being on the radio, we're not getting smacked upside the knots. You know what I mean? We're not getting smacked upside the head doing radio.
Hey Mel, did you see the weigh-in today?
I didn't, Cisco, but I'm sure you'll inform us about it.
I think you need to go see the weigh-in and then you come back here and say,
Cisco,
hey, the guy's still, you know, the guy is still healthy. The guy is really still healthy. He actually sounds better than Shane Mosley.
Hey, Cisco, let me ask you this, since you brought up Shane Mosley. Is it true that he called out Paulie Malignaggi because Paulie Malignaggi didn't want to fight him?
There was a fight that was brewing between Paulie and Mosley. It wasn't that he was calling them out. It was a fight that was brewing within Golden Boy. But for whatever reason, I don't know if it was Paulie or somebody, or the money wasn't right, the fight was pretty much called off. Now Adrian Broner is talking about Paulie Malignaggi.
Yeah.
I mean, I think everybody wants Paulie Malignaggi, let me tell you. Ever since he won that
title,
you know, these guys realized that, hey, man, wait a second, Paulie Malignaggi has a title? You know,
exactly.
So even Adrian Broner is licking his chops, you know. He's ready
to
go.
I don't think Malignaggi qualifies to fight Adrian Broner. You know why? Because he doesn't drive a yellow cab, and it's not a Ford Taurus.
But I'm gonna tell you something about Paulie Malignaggi, that even though you say he doesn't qualify, of course, to fight Broner because Broner's been fighting stiffs, it's the guy, you know, Paulie is not a big puncher. We know that. Paulie is also a guy that...
You had the fight at the Barclays Center that he fought. The guy got knocked out.
Right, he got knocked down. He got knocked down by. Listen to me.
He won that fight on jabs. The whole.
No, he didn't win that fight. He did not win that fight. That dude, Cano beat him. Cano beat him.
No, I don't.
Pablo Cano beat him. You know what I mean? And he got the decision over him, but he did not win that fight. Paulie did not win that fight. And if you look at it.
The guy came out strong in the latter rounds, man. He knocked out Paulie. I thought Paulie was finished.
Yeah,
I watched that fight the first few rounds, man.
Listen,
I mean,
with all due respect to the other experts on the panel, I could beat Paulie Malignaggi, okay? With all due respect to the experts on the panel, I could beat Paulie Malignaggi, all right? All the guy has is a jab and little else.
I'm gonna say something.
Broner is a better fighter than Cano is, of course. And if you look at Paulie's last fight where he struggled and he pretty much lost that fight, he got a gift. There's a lot of fighters. I mean, why do you think Shane Mosley was thinking about coming back? You know what I mean? Because
well,
he saw an opportunity
money,
not only to beat a guy, not only to beat Paulie, but to win a title. It's all about. You know, getting that title and getting himself back into a big money fight. And Broner is pretty much the same thing. Now, the problem with Broner is that once he goes up to 147, there is no turning back. There is no turning back.
Since I just want to throw this out there to you guys, listen, once you hit 147 and 154, let me tell you something. When you hit these guys, it's not the same.
That's the point.
And right about now, I think a lot of the best fighters that we're starting to see at 147 and 154. I mean, that's where the competition's at right now.
No, the competition is at 147 and 140, not at 154. Who's at 154? There's nobody there. You understand what I'm saying? At 147 and 140, you got names. You got Lucas Matisse, Mike Donna. You got a lot of fighters. You know Danny Garcia who's fighting with Zab Judah. You got a lot of names at 140. And then at 147, you got Timothy Bradley.
Martinez is a middleweight, and nobody wants Martinez.
Martinez is a middleweight. Nobody wants Martinez.
Even Pretty Boy Floyd, even Money Mayweather doesn't want him. I don't know about that. I mean, I think at 154, you got a few names. But I agree with you about 147. That's definitely where the fights are at, and
147 and 140 is hot right now.
Yep.
Those two weight classes, you got Brandon Rios at 140, who just went up and beat, and he's going to have his rematch with Alvarado, right?
I don't know why
that fight
should never been made.
You still got Amir Khan out there. You know, you got a lot of names. You still got Victor Ortiz that should be coming around sooner or later. You know,
You got a lot of names in that weight class.
At 154, you just had Bundridge who just lost to Ishe Smith. I mean, come on. That was a terrible fight.
You talk about Victor Ortiz, too. There was a name that it looked like he was kind of going to be not kind of getting the respect that he had, but you know he came back. He beat Berto. He showed a little more heart. The fact that you mentioned his name it says a lot because there was a time I think a couple years ago we thought he was a name that was going to fade and go away. But the fact that you know he's still out there, he's still viable, he's still in the mix says a lot about how he has survived. We're talking about Boy, who's involved with the stars. Huh?
He's not involved with Dancing with the Stars, Victor Ortiz.
Well, you know, I guess that doesn't hurt either, huh, Dusty? But the thing is, we talked about Golden Boy and Oscar, how they may be a monopoly. But, no, you got to take a hat off, though. Trout against Alvarez is a very credible fight. That's a very credible fight. As opposed to when you had Pacquiao, Cloudy, Pacquiao. But the thing, too, is you have to take my hat off them, too, because – you know, I think we talked about how dangerous of a fight that would be. But, again, Lady A, the boxing way, that's the show tonight. Rooney had asked a question earlier. I want you to shoot at the panel. And he talked about, and would you love to, Lady A, you can be the first. Hearns against Leonard, and he felt that, you know, Tommy, I told Tommy one time that, you know, nobody ever beat him, he just lost. Tommy had the ability to beat everybody, and he showed that boxing ability against Ray. Rooney feels, though, that the big difference in their fights was Ray's ability to be the technician, and as you look at it,
I beg to differ. Hold on, wait a minute.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's his co-main event now.
I beg to differ. You know why?
I'm waiting for the bell.
Look at, no. Okay.
I beg to differ
that if you look at the Ray Leonard and Tommy Hearns fight, okay, you analyze that fight, right? In the beginning of that fight, it was all Tommy, right? Tommy was taking his jab out there, was keeping him at bay. And then all of a sudden, you see Sugar Ray Leonard close the distance on him and start banging at him, hit him with body shots.
The difference between Ray was giving Ray trouble in the beginning of that fight.
Tommy Hearns' size, his height, his reach was giving Ray Leonard problems.
Yes.
The reason why Ray Leonard won that fight was because Ray Leonard, at the end of the day, was physically stronger than Tommy Hearns.
Stop, Cisco, because you're saying what Emmanuel Stewart told me. Tommy was not on the kind of diet he should have had. He ran out of gas.
You can't say that Cisco's that far off, but here's the thing. You and I had spoken about it earlier, and it's that, you know, basically what happened with that fight was Leonard, at the end, toward the end, I think that also with the conditioning, you started to see a little bit more of him fading out and
Ray?
I'm talking about Hearns.
Tommy Hearns. You're right about that.
Emmanuel said Tommy was not on the kind of diet he should have been in. He started listening to people. He wasn't 100% physically.
I think it was conditioning. What happened was he won a battle. Hold on.
I'm going to put you on. I'm saying the difference in that fight was conditioning. And Tommy was not in the condition he should have been.
Right.
But Ray won a battle of attrition with Tommy in that Rumble. That's what it was.
Tommy Hearns showed us in that fight that he could box with Ray Leonard. He showed that.
Had Tommy Hearns been in shape, he beat you. Wait a minute.
If you look at, you're right. As far as the stamina, you're correct with that. The stamina was also one of Tommy's problems. But if you look at the very end of that fight when he saw you're blowing it, Ray. What did Ray Leonard do? Ray Leonard went after him and took him out. It was almost like Sugar Ray Robinson's fight with Randy Turpin. Remember that fight? Right?
Yeah.
He was losing the fight.
What a tremendous analogy.
And he told him, he knocks out Randy Turpin. That's exactly what happened.
The problem is, if you look at that fight, he literally knocked
Tommy Hearns through the ropes. You understand what I'm saying? We saw that, Cisco.
We're not blind. We ain't dusty without our glasses. Come on, baby. We saw that.
Look, what I'm trying to tell you guys is this.
Here he is.
The Sugar Ray Leonard Tommy Hearns fight was a typical profile of Tommy Hearns. I hate to agree with you, Doc, that he wasn't well-nutritioned.
What's wrong? You can't agree with a brother?
No, knock it off. So what I'm trying to tell you is that Tommy Hearns always had a problem with stamina.
You know what you saw in that fight?
In the Sugar Ray fight, Sugar Ray had just come off
retina surgery.
No. It wasn't that yes, didn't happen. That happened afterwards.
It was after that fight.
That happened afterwards.
No, it happened
afterwards.
That
happened afterwards. The eye surgery happened afterwards.
Look it up again. He happened to be fighting with a repaired eye.
No, dude, where you get that? Where you get that, Dusty? Where you get that? That's wrong. That's wrong.
It was Tommy who messed up the eye in the first place.
Yeah, his eye didn't get bad. So after the Tommy fight, it wasn't before. Right. And let's say this. Look, that fight brought greatness in both guys because we saw back and forth in that fight. We saw one guy adjust. We saw another guy adjust. What happened with Ray Lennon was Tommy Hearns was beating him.
That's what happened.
It was the one time in the fight because Hearns was beating Sugar Ray, and Sugar Ray's left eye was closed due to the surgery. What happened?
No,
there was no surgery.
You're
losing
it. The surgery that Tommy Hearns kept putting with that jab. That was the surgery.
That was the surgery.
That left jab that Tommy kept sticking in there. The second fight was a 12 rounder. If the second fight went 15 rounds, Ray would have knocked out Tommy the second fight. Because even though Tommy had dropped once or twice, Tommy was ready to go again. The stamina has always been a problem with Tommy, and Tommy had a chance to get away with it in the first fight, didn't do the things he should have done to get away with it, which brought the second fight. But that was a draw, but that second fight, if that goes 15 rounds, Tommy fades again, and Ray wins again. As it was, they gave Tommy a draw. People said, well, they thought Tommy won, but a draw you could live with. But
Ray said that Tommy won that fight personally, and it's on record that Tommy won that fight. With a draw you could go either way, but I'm saying draw or not.
If it went 15 rounds,
I watched that fight. That was no draw. That was no draw.
No, listen, I got no problem with Tommy getting the fight. What I'm trying to say, had it been a 15 rounder again, Ray would have beat him again.
You're probably right.
The fact of the matter is,
Cisco, on the Doc Dennis Sportsnet Show, you are right. Okay, Cisco, let's get the right, baby.
Can I make a point here before the show is over, please?
Go ahead, Rooney. Ladies and gentlemen,
the point that I've been trying to make for like the longest time is this, all right? The fact of the matter is that up until then, guys weren't going 10, 11, 12 rounds with Tommy Hearns, okay? He was knocking, sort of like Mike Tyson in his up-and-coming prime when he was knocking everybody out in 2, 3, 4, 5 rounds tops, okay? So the fact of the matter is that he hadn't been going 10, 12, 13 rounds, you know, with any other opponent. That was one of the reasons that, like I'm trying to tell you guys, Ray, what he did was win a battle of attrition with Tommy, because as Cisco said, he was behind in that fight. As everybody can see, the first half of that fight, he was behind. What happened was about midway through that fight, they actually switched roles, and Ray, who was the hunted, became the hunter, and Tommy was the one that was trying to box. That's what happened.
If Tommy Hearns would have done something that the Kronk gym didn't teach people, he'd have won that fight. If he had an H-O-L-D, had he hold
yeah.
on.
Yeah,
okay?
hold on.
Had he done but, that, hold on, leaned on Ray.
I don't think he could have done it because
too long
Ray Lennon,
hold.
Ray Lennon too long. Was physically too strong.
Okay,
Ray
good point.
Let him hold.
Good point.
Yeah,
good point.
It wouldn't have happened.
Good point. Yeah, I mean, it's all back to gentlemen. We've got a fight tomorrow. We've talked about it. Rooney ran to Mama to get some support, so we've got to go back with that.
I don't know if I got it yet, but we'll see.
But we're going to let Lady A start with it. We've got a good 20 minutes. Doc Stanley's Sports and Up. Blog Talk Radio on Touch the Guard Radio Network. It's the Boxing Way with Lady A. It's the Friday show. Tomorrow, Don King co-promotes his first fight ever at the Barclays Center along with the Golden Boy, Oscar De La Hoya. It is the longest reigning middleweight champion in the history of the sport, most title defenses, and the oldest man to win a world championship, Bernard Hopkins, B-Hop, who says tomorrow he's going to be the executioner.
And who should be retiring.
He's up, Rudy. We're going to let you get to Lady A. You started off. Rudy will come behind you. Thoughts on tomorrow's fight? And I know the big question has been, we talked about Sir Hopkins still be fighting. But tomorrow, who do you like and why? And then we're going to let Rudy come behind you, the Cisco Kid, and Dusty H. Rex Brown. Lady A, the Boxing Way with Lady A here on Sports In Depth, Block Talk Radio, the first lady of boxing, not only on Sports In Depth, but in the world. Lady A, Lady A, tomorrow, who do you like and why? Because they say tomorrow is not Bernard Hopkins, it's not B-Hop, it's the execution once again. Talk to us, sweetheart.
Well, I'm gonna do this, Doc, because, you know, I told you I was going to be on the show for like 5 minutes, and now it's already like almost, 20 to 8. Because, as usual, you do this to me all the time.
It's your public and your fans. Don't blame me.
Okay. I think that the guys will agree with me. If you see a fighter like Bernard, that showed up to fight Kelly Pavlik, you know, I think it's going to be a great fight and that he'll pull it off. I think that I have to say that I do not agree with Rooney, because I don't think that Hopkins is going to leave unless it's on his back and it's on his own terms. So I see Hopkins fighting a few more fights after this one at the Barclays Center. My heart is saying that, you know, I want Hopkins to win the fight. I think he can beat this guy. So that's my opinion, and I'll leave it to you guys. I can't stay on, Doc. I got to go. I reached my destination.
Okay,
all right, so.
Lady A with boxing, the Boxing Way with Lady A, she's on her way, but we're still here a little bit, have a little more to say. We want to thank you. She's got to get back in the studio.
And, Doc, if I could just leave it with this. Mi besos a todos los hombres míos. I love you guys.
Okay, Nina.
Hey,
are you
going to
be at the fight?
What happened?
Are you going to be at the fight tomorrow?
She'll be there.
Listen to him. You asking for me?
Hey, lady, I got this.
Oh, you got this. All right.
I got
this. Love you guys. Talk to you later.
All right. Bernard Hopkins tomorrow, and we also are telling you that it's the first co-promotion by Don King at the Barclays Center, his first fight ever. Interesting thing, I talked to Cloud yesterday, and I said, you know, and Rooney, you're going to come in now after this. I said, you know, do you feel that you know, that as your career continues, that there's a need, a desire, a want for you to fight in Madison Square Garden to, you know, fulfill your resume? And he said something that was kind of mind-boggling. He said, you know, he said, this here is the new Madison Square Garden. Rooney, dovetail on that?
Yeah, well, probably. I mean, it's a spanking brand new center, and, you know, I hear that it's very. The only complaint I heard is that the seats are a bit small, but otherwise, that it's a fabulous, you know, a fabulous place with a fabulous view. As for Cloud, I got to say, Doc, I really don't know that much about him. I think maybe I've seen him once or twice, so I don't really know that much about him, to be honest with you. The only reason I'm going to give him the nod and all of you guys will probably laugh when I say this. The only reason I'm giving Cloud the nod is because I just don't have a whole lot of faith in 48-year-old guys trying to fight. So that's basically about the only reason. I hope Hopkins comes in and out, you know, with relatively a little damage, because I don't really want to see the guy go out on his shield. But like I said, you guys know what I think about Father Time.
Tony, was there anybody ever in wrestling that you thought hung on too long?
Wrestling is kind of a different thing. I mean, wrestling, for the old timers back in the day to wrestle into their 50s, I mean, the Ric Flairs and whatnot of the world was not an uncommon thing at all. Guys pack it in now a bit earlier than that. But back in the days, for the Killer Kowalskis of the world and the Fred Blassies, I mean, just to quickly say, Doc, I remember once being relatively young, and Blackie had to be at least 52 or 54 years old. And quite frankly, by doing what we call the things to get cheap heat, low blows and things of that nature, he was still the most booed and best villain on the card. So, yeah, it wasn't uncommon. To answer your question, too long, Doc? At the moment, I wasn't really focused on that, so I'm not sure. I'm sure there's a couple of guys that probably should have packed in. Because wrestling, actually, quite frankly, even though it's considered to be entertainment, is actually, and I can say this from personal experience, an absolutely brutal way to make a living. Seriously, no question about it.
So, tomorrow's Cloud against
Hopkins, I'm saying a couple of things here, too. Hopkins is not going to come back, Cisco, against a guy he can't beat.
Yeah, you know, at first I was like, ain't no way Tavares Cloud's going to win this fight, you know. I mean, that's pretty much how I thought about it. I mean, I remember his last fight with Campillo. I was like, you know, he looked really horrible, et cetera, et cetera. But I will say this, you know. Hello? All right, man. I will say this. I spoke to a gentleman the other day, my man Lem. He writes for Ring Magazine. And we were going back and forth about this fight. And you know, he made quite a few statements that kind of had me thinking, you know. He said that if you don't give Hopkins a chance to think, which means if he goes in there and fights his fight, which Tavares Cloud is, I mean, Cloud is not a technical boxer. So if he goes in there and tries to be technical with Hopkins, Hopkins is going to have his way because that's Hopkins' specialty. So if he goes in there and fights his fight, which is go in there and dog Hopkins and maul him and throw lots of punches like he usually does and don't give Hopkins a chance to think, you know, that can fall into Tavares Cloud's hand. Two is that because, you know, Hopkins fights in spurts. He has to fight in spurts. You know, he's older now. He's much older. He's 48 years old. He can't fight like a young man. He can't throw lots of punches. We never see that in Hopkins, you know. So Tavares Cloud has to use his youth. He has to use his strength, which is going in there.
His advantage,
which is going in there and throwing lots of punches, using his strength to maul Hopkins around. And you know what? He did. You know, after telling me that, I kind of thought back to when he fought Calzaghe. You know, Calzaghe he dropped Calzaghe early in that fight and still lost the fight. And the reason why he lost the fight was because Calzaghe throws lots of punches, is a speedy guy, and never gave Hopkins the chance to set himself. Hopkins at one point was so out of his mind, he walked to the wrong corner. You understand what I'm saying? So, you know, if Tavares Cloud's done his homework, okay, and I mean he's working with Abel Sanchez for this one fight. I mean I don't think one fight is gonna, you know, a trainer is gonna change a guy in one fight. But I think that I give Cloud a little bit more of a chance this time around than I said the first time. I think Cloud, if he fights his fight, can win this fight, and we may see Hopkins get hit, maybe mauled, maybe pushed around more than we've seen him in his whole career, but Hopkins, yet again, is still the bigger guy. I mean, even at the weigh-in, he's a bit taller than Cloud. He's still bigger than the guy, you know. So it's interesting to see, you know, if Tavares Cloud is going to be able to implement his physical style on Hopkins tomorrow night.
Talk Radio, Sports and Death on the Trust and Guard Radio Network. It's the Boxing Radio Lady A. Dusty, are you?
Yeah.
I kind of know the answer to the question, so I should ask it. But how much did that stun you, Dusty, that Cloud said he's not even concerned about fighting the Madison Square Garden? I think that says not so much about the sport, but about how the Garden has depreciated. I remember.
First of all, you know, everybody talk about who's going to win tomorrow. And on paper, it looks like Cloud thoroughly over Hopkins. What people don't seem to understand that it's a mind game. And Cloud is thinking of fighting a sure Hall of Famer who's won many titles and he's an icon in the business. Mayweather once told me, and I sort of have believed, that boxing is a mind game. It's a chess game. You got to come in there and control the mind game, and then the physicality will take over. And that basically is...
You called him Mayweather? What, are you kidding me?
No, wait a minute. I didn't interrupt anybody. Okay, Cisco. I mean, Cisco, I'm sorry. But what I'm saying, and Cloud, yes, has all the attributes, youth, power, even though his opponents have not been. But then I'm sort of guided or misguided by the last fight, Campillo, and I'm saying, how the heck could this guy, who's such a powerhouse, who looks so good in two other fights that I saw him in, can buckle down to a dude who doesn't even have nine knockouts and outboxed. Now, that's the key. Hopkins is too smart to trade punches with these guys. When he traded punches with Pascal, he hit the canvas three times. The second time around, he chucked and jived, played with the guy's mind, hit him in spurs, collar punch.
I got a question for you.
What, you know, everybody's talking, let me finish, Doc.
Well, what does that say about the division of a 48-year-old guy wins the title? Well, what does that say about the entire division? Tell me.
Nothing.
We have definitely said this is why the game.
We've definitely said that this game
is nowhere near where it should be as far as skill. It's nowhere should be as far as acknowledgement. And this is why. I mean, one of the reasons why Bernard Hopkins. I remember when Ali came back to fight Larry Holmes. And we understand, too, the age and the fact that Ali took some medication that didn't help him. But Ali said, you know, I wouldn't come back if I couldn't beat him. And so a lot can be said here. Bernard wouldn't come back, I mean, if he didn't think he could beat him. Now, we're going to say if he can beat him or not. But we've long said, I mean, Dusty, every week, him and Al, for the last 2 years, Cisco has been alluding since he jumped in, that the sweet side, you know, this game is close to being ended. You know, sad to say, you know, this game in boxing, with the MMA emergence and WWF still around, boxing is on a rapid downhill slide. And the fact that we don't have a heavyweight champion from America, that's a tremendous detriment. I mean, so it's...
Well, Doc, I told you the reason for that. That's because all the guys that are 6'7", 250, and then 6'8", and 250, all those guys are playing power forward in the NBA or linebacker or
also,
offensive
Rudy,
line in the NFL.
Nobody,
that's where all those guys are.
There's nobody to teach them the game. I mean,
really the bottom line is the lack of trainers, the lack of real trainers. Because we got heavyweights, we got American heavyweights, but they can't fight.
Yeah,
it's not that
the
they're going
to
the NBA or they're going to football.
Say LeBron James, okay? What do they list this kid at? 6'8", 260, 260. That's where all the guys who are that size with that kind of agility are doing.
That's not true. That's not true. Let me tell you something. We got heavyweights. We got heavyweights, but they can't fight. That's the problem with boxing.
That's the thing, too.
These heavyweights can't fight.
If you don't have heavyweights, if you're just a bunch of big sisters, no one would have got it.
You
can't fight. They're not a good heavyweight.
Tony, we lost a guy. We lost a guy.
That's all they are.
November. We lost a guy in November who was the prototype of what boxing was. Hector Camacho was with the boxing angles, okay, defense, slipping punches. That's the game. I mean, the idea in boxing was to hit the other guy and he not hit you back. That's boxing. Defense, tying a guy up, giving him angles, counter punching, jabbing, sticking. Dude, those are attributes. You know, Hector Camacho was born to fight. Ray Leonard, Duran Hagler. They were born. This is innate gifts given to you. Dusty, Cisco, guys are big and strong. They don't know how to fight. It's like a fastball. You either have a fastball or you don't have a fastball.
Hey, Doc, I want to
say one more thing.
When was the last time you saw a heavyweight on the scales, at a weigh-in, look like a champion? Look like, you know, Ali did, Joe Frazier did, Ken Norton did, George Foreman did. All these guys are fat and out of shape. You understand what I'm saying? You don't see
guys
in shape. They just couldn't fight.
They're not in shape. These guys today are not in shape.
I mean, look at Riddick Bowe. Here's a guy. Riddick Bowe had the chance to really be carry the mantle from Tyson. Here's a guy. Never forget the classic line that our good friend does, your good buddy. Riddick Bowe wanted a kitchen in his bedroom. A kitchen in his bedroom as a fighter?
And that was when he was heavyweight champion.
Yeah, a kitchen in the bedroom.
Well, Doc, I guess you just mean Big Daddy.
Seriously,
then, okay? I guess it was a Big Daddy. That's what
he is. Another thing about Bo, a good big man never loses a good little man. Holyfield, 2 out of 3, he should have never lost Holyfield if he's a good big man. And look, a lot of fights, a lot of bailed out. Both times.
Hey, Doc.
A lot of
losing
mirrors.
You know what?
I think I want to be the champ.
It's no accident that he never fought Lennox Lewis as a professional.
No, I think that may have been a case of money, rock. But you know, I mean, Lennox Lewis is no.
Let me tell you, if
Lennox Lewis got
Lennox
knocked out, knocked out. O-U-T.
What is
that? Black Talk Radio, Sports in Depth, the boxing wave with Lady A. We're about ready to close it up. The guys are giving their synopsis, who's going to win, why they feel they're going to win, and we'll be giving you another education. It's about a good 4 minutes left to go here. Some other things happen. Remembering that on this day, on a Monday, March 8th, 1971, Muhammad Ali lost for the first time to Smoking Joe Frazier in the fight, not of the century, but the number one heavyweight fight in the history of mankind. Ali and Frazier would fight two more times. Ali would beat Joe Frazier again in Madison Square Garden in January of 1974. And then they would have the thriller in Manila, in which after that fight, both guys should have walked away. But that is considered, if Ali Frazier won, is the most significant fight in heavyweight boxing history. Ali Frazier 3 may have been the greatest. Doc Stanley, Block Talk Radio. Questions yet on the Trust and Guard Radio. Rooney closes out here these couple of minutes, and we'll come on back with a little mic on, lights off.
Doc, the Sports and Destinations been here. The Sports and the Panels been here. Hi, Mel Smith Jr., I've been here. We've been here courtesy of the Trust and God Radio Network. And the straw that serves the drink has been here. And that's been the incomparable Doc Stanley. Thank you, Doc.
Thank you, Rooney. Ladies and gentlemen, it don't get any better than this, because there's nothing better than but it's her. Doc Stanley, Block Talk Radio, on the Buzzer Network. The Boxing Way with 88. They've been all here tonight. This is Junior, Baby Lewis, the Skill Kid, and another than Mel Hostel, a.k.a. Little Coco Jr. We will close out with the closing words of the great, the late Marvin Gaye, who simply asked a question that has its own answer. Leave you with three thoughts. Live your life today and then stand before God tomorrow. Life's most consistent, most urgent question is, what are you doing for others? Service to others, they eventually pay for your space on earth. And Marvin Gaye, now, will take us away. Marvin, please.
I just want to ask a question. Who really cares? Save a world in despair. Who really cares? There'll come a time.
There'll come a time
when the world won't be singing.
When the world singing.
Flowers won't grow.
Flowers won't grow. No.
Bells won't be ringing.
No bells won't be ringing.
Who really cares?
Who really cares?
Who's willing to try?
Who is willing to try?
To save the world.
To save the world.
That's destined.
That is destined to die.
When I look at the world.
When I look at the world.
It fills me with sorrow.
It fills me with sorrow.
Little children today.
Children today.
Really gonna suffer tomorrow.
Really suffer tomorrow.
Oh, what a shame.
What a shame.
Such a bad way to
such
live.
Such a bad way to live.
Oh, who is to blame?
Who is to blame?
We can't stop
when
living.
We can't. Stop living, oh, oh.
Live.
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 Live for life.
Live life for the children.
Live life for the children. Oh, for the children.
See, let's save the children. Let's save all the children.
Thank you for joining us for this installment of Sports in Depth with the legendary Doc Stanley. We hope you join us, and please tell a friend about Sports in Depth, heard every Wednesday and Friday from 12 to 2 p.m. on SAR-FM Radio, the heartbeat of Africa, in the heartbeat of the Big Apple, New York City, in the heartbeat of Harlem.
I've been away so long. But now, baby, Billy's back home. I've done and said it all. It all means a thing. But now I know that home is a woman to call my very own. There's a sound crying over me. 'Cause this time, baby, I won't leave. There is no place left for me to roam. I just had to know what there was to be. Now I know that was eventually. 'Cause when you've got someone who waits for you while you're gone, you should try to hold on to that. You should try to hold on to that. You should try. Oh,
Doc Stanley. Sports in Depth on Blog Talk Radio on the Southern Garden Network. You've heard The Boxing Way with Lady A having her way and her say. And we end with this three thoughts. Live your life today as if you stand before God tomorrow. Death happens every day, but it doesn't affect us. It comes our way. Life's most insistent, the most urgent question is, what are you doing for? I simply say, from the bottom of my heart, God bless you all, and trust in God.